Before we dive into today's trip down memory lane, a quick shout out to the fine folks at Remind Magazine, who help keep the nostalgia train rolling. This season, the Pop Culture Preservation Society is proudly sponsored by Remind, the publication that understands your collection of Tiger Beat magazines, TV guide issues, and random lunchboxes is not clutter, it's history. We love when Remind lands in our mailboxes, and we can enjoy that analog experience of flipping through its pages and reading all about the classic TV shows and movies and music and all of those pop culture treasures that made us who we are. And as an exclusive offer to PCPS listeners, you can get a full year of Remind magazine for just $12. That's 86% off the cover price. Just go to remindmagazine.com/pop. That's remindmagazine.com/POP. And you can take advantage of this incredible offer. Trust us, you will be so glad you did. One of my favorites were the Old Glory Bicentennial condoms. And one of the little things on there, it said for novelty use only. So I guess maybe they're saying that your one firework explosion was maybe not going to be protected by the Old Glory.
Hello world, it's a song that we're singing. Come on, get happy. A whole lot of loving is what we'll be bringing. We'll make you happy.
Welcome to the Pop Culture Preservation Society, the podcast for people born in the Big Wheel generation who still have a rusted bicentennial quarter stashed in a drawer next to the pearls they got as a confirmation gift.
We believe our Gen X childhoods gave us unforgettable songs, stories, characters, and images. And if we don't talk about them, they'll disappear, like Marshall, Will, and Holly on a routine expedition.
And today, we're celebrating the spirit of 76 through your eyes with a collection of special star-spangled bicentennial memories straight from our listeners. I'm Carolyn.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Michelle, and we are your pop culture preservationists.
This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island.
Break out the flags, strike up the bands, light up the sky. That is a quote from President Gerald Ford about our 1976 bicentennial celebration, and it is the opening line to a new book called Bicentennial Chic by Mike Derrico. I hope I'm saying your name right, Mike. I'm going to say Derrico, and you can, if it's not that, you can change it after this, and you can say your name is Derrico. Mike Derrico, hope that's right. Mike Derrico says, if you are a baby boomer or a Gen Xer in America, the two most anticipated events of your life were the bicentennial and the new millennium. Quoting from his book, he says, the early years of the 1970s were always filled with the constant reminder that America's 200th birthday was coming up in 1976. As the decade began, committees were already being formed to plan for the worldwide events that would simultaneously take place when that day finally arrived. Even in the year of this publication, 2026, the bicentennial has never been surpassed as the most talked about and widely anticipated day in American history. You heard about it in 72, 73, and in 1974. But around 1975, it really began to take hold of the public conscience. If you were a student during the 1975-76 school year, rarely did a day go by where you didn't hear about something in preparation for the bicentennial. People, this was years in the making. And Mike Derrico, again, Derrico, oh, that's your name. Okay, and again, Kristen, stop it. And Mike Derrico says the big question that was front and center in the literal years of lead up to the bicentennial was, what are you doing on July 4th, 1976? Where will you be when this milestone is upon us? This year's semi-quincentennial, say that five times fast, it's hitting different because it doesn't appear that we are collectively, culturally embracing our upcoming 250th anniversary in the same way that we did the bicentennial. And we don't need to get into why, but maybe because of that melancholy or apathy or anxiety, it's making some of us nostalgic for the fanfare and the true collective celebration that was the bicentennial. Mm-hmm. As you will hear from the literally hundreds of stories you submitted to us, it was, just as Mike Derrico said, clearly an epic event that was one of the most anticipated events of your entire life, so much so that Mike Derrico is declaring this year the 50th anniversary of the bicentennial.
I love that.
I love that.
Isn't that great?
That's what I think I'm celebrating.
And he has so many interesting arguments in this book. It's not, I want to make sure that everybody knows this is not all about the bicentennial. I haven't finished the book yet, but it really is intriguing. He's using the bicentennial as the backdrop to everything that was happening during that time. The subtitle of the book is Bronx Bombers, Son of Sam, Kisteria, and the Birth of Saturday Night Fever. And he really regards this book not really as an analysis of all of that, but as a source of, these are his words, time travel. This is the source of time travel. That's it. He says, I'm not going to pick it apart. I'm just going to present it to you on a silver platter. And he says the bicentennial, whether by accident or by design, was not just a party. It was a real pivot point in our culture. So much so that the heart of the 1970s, like everything that we know about the 1970s, how we picture the 1970s, existed in the span of the 18 months surrounding America's 200th birthday celebration. Like all of the things that you think of as emblematic of the 70s happened around that time, from Jaws and Star Wars to, like he said, Kiss and Saturday Night Fever. And my God, that soundtrack and disco and the Bee Gees. John Travolta, come on, whether it's Barbarino or The Boy in the Plastic Bubble or Tony Manero, John Travolta is an emblem of the 1970s. And he was emerging like with fireworks, pachoo, pachoo, during the bicentennial. He was the it person going into the summer of 1976. And the bicentennial, historically, it's just bigger than we even knew.
Well, it's like the 1970s, everything, no matter if it was 1976, if it was 1974 or 1978, all those things you just mentioned, almost in our memories, they're kind of clouded in a red, white, and blue cloud, aren't they? Like a haze around them.
That's true.
That's what I see, at least. Everything I think of in the 70s. Sort of centers around the bicentennial. And man, Mike, where were you and your book about 5 years ago when we did our entire episode devoted to the entire year of 1976? That would have been prime, you know, a prime source for us.
We could do part two of 1976 based on the book that he's just written.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. That book's available now, correct?
It is available now. We will put all that information about how to access his book in our show notes. It's available everywhere.
Yeah.
Bicentennial Chic is the name of it.
What were you doing leading up to the bicentennial?
Well, I can tell you that I realized, getting ready for this episode, that one of my lifelong dreams was actually born in 1976 and a direct result of the bicentennial.
I know what it is.
I'm sure you do. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. My desire to become a colonial reenactor in Williamsburg, Virginia, can be traced directly to me donning a colonial dress and cap for colonial days in fifth grade, which happened to be 1976. I loved that costume so, so much. I would wear it all the time. I wore it to bed as like my nightgown, kind of channeling Laura Ingalls. It was like I was putting on clothes I forgot I loved. And I think I am a colonial person reincarnated.
Yeah, it will like the Carolyn of the past. Like 1776 Carolyn existed, and that and the bicentennial woke it up.
That's a great way to put that. Yes, I love that costume. And I saw an image on social media somewhere of like the Butterick or Simplicity pattern that was out in 1976 for kids
kids.
For the colonial.
I was about to say she's about to make it fun.
The colonial, dresses that so many moms and grandmas and aunts and everybody was sewing, because I know I was not alone in that donning of that colonial wear.
I remember turning those pages in the Butterick or the McCall's, and I'm looking for the colonial dress. And, do you remember that? Everybody standing in the sewing store and the fabric store and those giant books.
You guys,
they were so heavy and big.
It was like torture for me when my mom would take, when she would say, oh, we've got to go to the fabric store, like, Hancock Fabrics or whatever it was, because she would spend forever. It's probably how my kids felt when they were little. And I'd be like, guys, we got to stop by Michael's, or whatever. Right. But I would sit there being so bored. Like, yeah. I had nothing to do. I would flip through the books and, like, look at the costume
that
section.
That was what you did.
For
your mom shopped.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
Right.
You and you know what the worst thing was? Sometimes my mom would say, okay, you know, colonial dress, whatever. That's pattern 17246. And then you went to these giant file cabinets. And then you went and you tried to find it. And then you found the section. And there were no,
there were no packets
in there. Like it was sold out.
Yeah.
And your heart was just, if it was something that you wanted, oh, my heart would be so broken. Be like, everyone's got that smock. You know, I wanted that smock outfit.
Well, I was, my dad's birthday was July 5th, and we always spent the month of July in Woodson, Texas, y'all. Still to this day, I think a very tiny, like one stoplight town. I think I've mentioned this many times on the podcast, but, I didn't have a big memory. I was seven. So unlike Kristen, I don't have a lot of memories of a lot of things when I was really, really young. So I had to, you know, ask my sister. And she did remember. And she said, we were in Woodson and we went to the Woodson Parade. And she said she remembers the fire trucks and all the red, white, and blue. And then she corrected herself and said, wait, it was Woodson. Probably one fire truck,
right.
Singular. But she does remember, you know, it was my dad's birthday. So we had just a shit ton of fireworks. And when we say fireworks, this was West Texas in the 70s. The what I remember are the actual firecrackers that you would just throw. And then the big deal for us was Roman candles. So you would hold, we could even hold them and they would go, and here's the sound they make. They go, you know, that little, but that was a big deal, firework back then. Like they didn't, I don't remember. I remember firework stands all over the place. So we had a ton of the little black snake, the little black thing you would light and it would make the snake. And then she said, we went to the lake. You know, my dad's family had a lake, like a cabin, a lake house on Possum Kingdom Lake. It just sounds so West Texas.
Yeah. Popping the tar bubbles at Possum Kingdom.
Yeah. Okay. I popped the tar bubbles other places, but, but at Possum Kingdom, she goes, that was the summer that they tried to teach you to water ski and Uncle Barney tied your skis together. So back in the day, so your skis didn't go out both ways. They would tie the tips of them together. And I remember this so clearly. She said, you got up, but you immediately fell forward, but you didn't let go. And everybody, we could just see your head under the water as the boat was dragging you. And, but you couldn't hear us. And everybody on the boat was yelling, let go! Let go. And I have such a memory of that, you guys. And I will say that might be the last time I ever attempted water skiing.
Yeah, done.
Because that scarred me. Many things scarred me from that cabin. That's where my fear of snakes, my debilitating fear of snakes started too. So I'm not going to tell you that story. But so I think my 4th of July was just kind of hometown. You know, we didn't do anything big.
For me, it was the first 4th of July after I had moved from California to St. Paul, Minnesota. And you've all heard this before, into this little cozy little tree-lined neighborhood, which had an annual 4th of July celebration. What I know now is a lot of what I experienced on the bicentennial is what they do every year. But for me, I thought it was the bicentennial.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, Christmas is always the pinnacle of how a child, what a child is excited for. The question is always, what is better, your birthday Day or Christmas? The bicentennial, July 4th, 1976, was way bigger than Christmas. Way. And I think I talk about this in our 1976 episode. The way that I experienced that joy was by opening our back door to go out to get my decorated bike. And there was a dead squirrel with the head eaten off on the doorstep because my cat would catch squirrels and then eat the head off. And that was always very dramatic. And I couldn't go outside because how do you get outside? There's a dead squirrel there. And I remember seeing that headless squirrel and just like, bloop, I just hopped right over it. Like, I'm not even scared. I don't care because it's the bicentennial.
Yeah.
And I had my banana seat bike all decorated with red, white, and blue streamers. And we had to bike over to the beginning of the bike parade. And it felt like
there were
a million people there. And for me, it felt like the Boston Marathon. Like, here we go. You guys, come on.
Sure.
Everybody go. And when I look at pictures now, there's so much that we're going to talk about today from people's comments are about what we were wearing. And it's only in retrospect that I understand that everything that I was wearing was red, white, and blue, including the red, white, and blue ribbons in my ponytails.
Mm-hmm.
And I just could not contain my joy. I couldn't do it. And then you ride your bikes in the parade down to the big park with the big bandstand, and there were bands and there were games and there was lemonade and there were hot dogs. And I just thought I was going to die the happiest person on earth.
Aww.
And I think what, like, just to bring it down deep again, I'm going to refer to Mike's book one more time. I think one of the biggest differences that we're feeling right now and back then was that there was a real sense of optimism, right? It wasn't just the day that we were happy about. We needed that day because the country had just been through something really difficult. The Vietnam War had just ended and we were kind of sweeping that under the rug. We were in the midst of a presidential election where there was this peanut farmer who, after years of Watergate scandals and resignations and people going to jail, this peanut farmer has nothing to do with Washington. And we're just like, optimism, optimism. He was an outsider. Everything was going to get better. And I think that is one of the biggest differences between then and now, is that we're having trouble finding, where's our peanut farmer, right? Where's the peanut farmer?
Yeah.
We don't have, everything is ongoing instead of just ended so we can sweep it away. And so I think that's just something that we can lean into and understand. If you're trying to figure out what your feelings are, that could be where your feelings are coming from.
Yeah. I would totally agree. It mm-hmm. was, you know, you mentioned the clothing and stuff, and it wasn't just that day. It was like the whole year, like the school year leading up
yes.
to it and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it was everybody. And so you just felt a part of this huge just team and collective
yes.
and community.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody, nobody looked dorky wearing red, white, and blue on, you know, May 13th or something, because it was just, you got away with it. And we just were on team red, white, and blue.
That's such a good point. That was the team uniform. And
right.
so our optimism, part of our optimism came from the fact that this was a very unifying event. We all wanted to get past these things and we all wanted the world to be better. And we were collectively, every single one of us, excited about this event.
Mm-hmm.
And should we give credit where credit is due? Like, is that our teachers, like, getting us excited for it? Like you said, it started so early.
I think it's just the collective,
yeah.
Community and the collective
yeah.
community. And when I say community, I don't necessarily mean exactly where you live. That community, I mean the community of
Nationwide.
America.
Yeah,
it was.
Mm-hmm.
It was. You had a very strong sense of that. That year
mm-hmm.
and for that
yeah.
event, you felt
yeah.
it differently
yeah.
than we do today, for sure.
Yeah.
And
right.
and is that because we're adults now? Are the kids feeling it today?
Maybe.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm. But you know, it's not like I see paper plates when I go out. That's about it. I don't see. You know, we're a month away, and listening to this, we're
right.
you know a
right.
days away. But like, I don't see a lot of stuff out. Like,
right.
I don't see things like signs.
And I think the school part that you mentioned, Kristen, that was a big part, because there were so many things that were different that year that were special. I mean, because, you know, mm-hmm. school is school and you have your SRAA books and, you know, you go and do the parachute and gym and it's kind of the same old, same old. But all of a sudden we're having like assemblies, or we're having special speakers come in, or we're getting to wear colonial garb and
yeah.
just having the time of our lives. And so I think the specialness of these activities, and I mean, come on, parades, decorating
yeah.
our bikes, all the things were super fun
yeah.
in our eyes, in a, you know, a child's eyes. So I think that all kind of was part of it as well.
Let's not forget, one of the most important things that was getting us excited about the bicentennial was Schoolhouse Rock. What we didn't know was that they were giving us this tremendous civics education that kind of helped us invest in what America meant. Now, we understand that there are lots of things that they were covering up, right? Schoolhouse Rock was not
yeah.
honest about how we stole land from Native people. So there was a lot of omission there. But all of that is to say that we knew about the shot heard around the world, and we were so proud of what happened on that day. And it wasn't just the act of the day that we knew what we were celebrating. We weren't ignorant about what we were celebrating. I think maybe today kids might think were having a birthday, but we knew what the birthday was because of what was happening in school and because of Schoolhouse Rock. And then because that was the year that America rocked, this, you know, every year of Schoolhouse Rock had a different theme. And so, of course, 1975, 1976 was America Rock. Not only was it teaching us about what happened, but it was teaching us civics lessons like how what happens to a bill? What is it called? I'm just a bill. There we go. how does a bill come to become a law? We knew about suffrage. We knew about women's suffrage. We knew that women couldn't vote. We knew about the famous American inventors. We knew about I don't know. Name them all. I have no
idea.
America's great American melting pot. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. No more kings.
We knew why kings were bad.
Right.
We came educated to this event. And that, I think, also helped us get excited.
Yeah. It was everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And much to that point that it was everywhere, we had one of our great friends, Erica Wides, who you all might have remembered. We've had a couple podcasts with her. You might know her as Chef Smarty Pants on her social media. And what she did was sent us a link to a New York Times article called How a Radical Historian Saved the Schlock of 76. So in terms of bicentennial being everywhere and kind of like you were just saying, it was Schoolhouse Rock. We were saying it was in schools. It was everywhere. You guys, this article points out it was everywhere.
Okay. Literally, yeah.
Yes. So the article starts by letting us know that sharing space in the Yale Library, okay, alongside a Gutenberg Bible, an original printing of the Declaration of Independence, and hand-drawn maps from the Lewis and Clark expedition. Okay, think of the weight of those things.
Yeah.
There is the Bicentennial Schlock Collection. And of course, if you don't know what the word schlock means, it's actually a Yiddish word for cheap, mass-produced, often tacky merchandise. In other words, all those mugs, plates, keychains, toilet paper rolls, all those things that we were seeing at this time, basically the stuff that your grandmother bought from a gift shop and then proudly displayed for 6 months and then put in a box in the basement.
That's literally the name of the exhibit.
It is literally the name of the exhibit.
Oh my God, that's
so
hilarious.
In 1976, a professor named Jesse Lemish at Yale asked his students, like, start collecting the schlock, the stuff you see just everywhere that's commemorating this bicentennial of ours. This kind of time of consumerism during 1976 is often referred to as the BUY centennial,
yeah,
because everybody was trying to make some money off of America's 200th birthday. And I wanted to share with you some of the crazy, absurd things that are in this collection. There's also a collection at Central Florida University that another professor had done, kind of a similar assignment to his students. And there are some additional items there that are just over the top crazy. So just bear with me here, because the rabbit hole of bicentennial schlock was deep. And I won't bore you with everything, although you wouldn't be bored. I'm just going to share with you maybe some of the most unlikely things that you could have come across. Because not only did these merchandisers and marketing people want us to purchase things, they wanted us to be consumed by this bicentennial moment. So it was things that you didn't even have to buy, like those sugar packets that you would put in your coffee or condiment packages, all of those things bicentennial themed. Okay, we also had a few different things, surgical caps. So in certain hospitals, if you were having surgery, your doctor or nurse's surgical cap would have been emblazoned with some kind of patriotic design. There were beer cans. There was toilet paper. There was my favorite, and just hold on here because this is such a flashback. Do you guys remember the bags that would be in the women's restroom, the kind of elongated bags that when removed a dirty sanitary napkin, you would put them in this bag and then dispose of them accordingly?
So were they only white and blue?
They were red, white. I get it. Ew, wait, I don't get it. Wait, red, white, and blue. Oh, okay, whatever, Michelle. But yes, 200 years of freedom.
Really?
We had to put those
giant maxi
napkins, pads
in there that people had on belts. But at that time,
it says right on it. She's showing it to us right now. Yeah. It says Santa bag.
Yeah. Santa bag.
Right above the Liberty Bell, it says Santa bag.
For personal hygiene. So insane. You guys, it wasn't just merchandise like that. Things like magazines were, the covers of the magazines were very influenced by 1976, including, and this is going to be a really nasty thing for me to say, but the July 1976 cover of Hustler had a woman's genitals covered by American flag underwear and nothing else. Yes. So now we're like objectifying women while we're celebrating the 4th of July bicentennial.
Is that desecrating the flag? It feels like it might be desecrating. Yes. If you can't let it touch the ground, I don't think you can let it touch your coochie. Yes.
Oh, God. But
got to burn those undies.
Yeah.
Playboy was a little bit more highbrow. They featured a woman who was wearing a see-through kind of red, white, and blue robe while she was holding up the American flag. So it wasn't touching
the ground.
That's not
touching the coochie or the ground.
That's right. So one of my favorites were the Old Glory Bicentennial condoms. And one of the little things on there, it said for novelty use only. So I guess maybe they're saying that your one firework explosion was maybe not going to be protected by the Old Glory.
It's only for looks? It's just for looks.
Yes. I just want to know what for novelty use only. I just want to know what novelty you use.
I don't know. I mean, maybe you could wear it.
Is it just for like?
You could wear it, but you couldn't sue them if for some reason it like had a leak or something, and there was a pregnancy. Like maybe have
some.
Well,
see, I'm just thinking novelty, like just like not to wear for sex. Just like, did they wear them just like walking around?
Wearing it to work?
Like that's like sort of like the women wore the undies. Did the guys just wear that when they wanted to raise their flag?
See, like, yeah, straight up, or I don't know. What if they were like little puppets and one of them was like the guy playing the fight?
He's playing a fight.
And if it's erect, yeah, and just like
a little
going
tricorn hat on the end of it.
Yeah. And Kristen, I think you had commented in our text thread about this New York Times article. It had a picture of those colonial Campbell soup cans. So you could collect the labels from Campbell's soup and then send it in and you could get a little colonial doll.
I wanted that so badly. I collected and collected, but I was never good with the follow through.
Yeah. And I don't even know that those always, you know, got to the appropriate places because sometimes it was and send with $1.99. And so I'd be the one sticking like quarters and pennies in something that was so heavy, and I'm sure I put 1 8-cent stamp on it or whatever.
It doesn't get there. It's just
got there anyway.
Do you remember the lunchbox? There was just a generic American Revolution lunchbox.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that actually would have been a bummer for me. I would rather have Charlie's Angels than like the guys with the fives.
Of course.
Yeah.
That was kind of a one and done. Because were you going to, I don't know. But it's that scene, right? Scene with the fife and the drum and all that stuff. It's so Americana.
A few weeks ago, we asked you, our listeners, to share your memories leading up to the bicentennial, like we said. And as usual, you all flooded our comment sections with stories from that year, from hometown parades and homemade costumes. Big shout out to the tricorn hat, by the way. To school pageants, to collecting bicentennial quarters like they were pirates' treasure. And for a lot of you, just being born that year was reason enough to celebrate. We got a lot of comments that were like, well, I was born that year.
I'm a bicentennial baby. I'm not. Some of you are bicentennial babies.
Yeah, and happy 50th. They had them in like bicentennial diapers and all that at the hospital.
Yes.
Happy 50th birthday to all of you, by the way, this year. So settle in because we have a lot of sweet and fun and hilarious memories to unpack. And thank you just so much to all of you who took the time to leave us such fun stories.
This has been so fun for me because this has become my new dinner party question. As we're prepping for this episode, I've been asking people, this is just another way to break the ice, right? Another thing to ask that is not, so what do you do? So I've been asking, do you remember the bicentennial? Do you remember what you did for the bicentennial? So I asked my friend Tony. Tony is the one, do you remember from our road trip episode, his mother was the one who kept 3 bags of candy for the 3 children in the front seat. And when one of the children did something wrong in the back seat, she would grab a handful of candy and throw it out the window.
So
that's
smart.
Tony. So when I asked him about the bicentennial, he got so excited because he said, "That's when I got my Evel Knievel bike."
Evel Knievel, our true hero.
Our
right?
true bicentennial hero.
Yeah.
Even though it turns out he was a really, really bad person. You guys just don't even Google it.
Don't need to.
So he was able to find a picture of his Evel Knievel bike, and it's like a proto motorcycle. Instead of the bar across, it has like a motorcycle body, and it is, of course, all stars and stripes, red, white, and blue.
Of course.
And Tony is perched on that. On that banana seat, again, dressed 100% in red, white, and blue. Everything has red, white, and blue stripes on it, from the shorts and the little Izod shirt to the tube socks. The red, white, and blue tube socks.
I mean,
you gotta
we
have
had,
the right color stripes.
And our roller skates, everything was. And listeners, keep an eye out this week on social media. Perhaps tomorrow. I can't promise anything, but we're going to do a fun little reel with all the pictures you all sent in. So keep an eye out for those. Okay, well, let's get to it. Our first story comes from Mouser70i. Oh, this is so great. Okay, my grandpa made me a red dollhouse with a white roof for the Christmas before. He would work the pipeline in Texas, January to March, when the ground was frozen here. He got me a big circular bicentennial sticker from the Johnson Space Center, and I slapped that sticker right on the middle of my dollhouse roof. She's so proud, right? Because also everything's bicentennial. That must have been like, this is the coolest thing ever.
It was pretty.
Well, my parents were not happy with that choice. He thought it looked very nice. My grandpa died just a couple of years later, and both the sticker and the dollhouse reminded me of him every morning when I woke up looking at it.
Oh, sweet.
And we made paper tricorn hats in school.
Of course you did.
MVP of 1976, hat. Yeah.
Well, one of the things I love the most about reading through the comments that everybody shared was the distinct like memory that was shared with like a parent or a sibling that they still to this day is so, it has such a special place in their hearts. And so I loved that this dollhouse reminded her every morning of her grandfather. And
what I love about Mouser's memory is that it's not like a giant parade or something like a big pageant or giant fireworks. It was a sticker. A sticker that she slapped on the dollhouse and that her parents got mad at her for. But that's what reminds her of the bicentennial.
It's like a
and
tattoo.
It's such a good,
like a
small
tattoo.
Memory tied to her grandpa. So we love that.
Love
Thanks
that.
For that
love
one.
That.
And little did she know at that moment in time, nor did her parents who were angry, is that she was then marking that as a historical artifact.
Right. Oh, my God. Seriously.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
She
much
know.
Like the bicentennial schlock that we talked about, these become cultural artifacts. I mean, at the time, you wouldn't think that the, you know, sugar packet or whatever was going to find its place next to a Gutenberg Bible. But, you know, that's how, you know, significant these items were. Much like this item that our friend Stephanie DTN shared. She was 4, and she remembers these really cool scratch and sniff activity books. And she remembers the cannon gunpowder scent.
It's like those awful Harry Potter jelly bellies that are like, this one tastes like barf. That's like such a distinct smell, though. I can smell it right now.
I can smell it. It's like the caps that you would make on the ground. It's like, and just, you know, scratch the cannonball. Sniff the cannonball.
Right. Genius.
I love it.
Dina Schweim, she says, I was 10. I collected bicentennial quarters and wore a lot of red, white, and blue. I hear you, Dina. My father put a bunch of pennies on the rail right before, wait for it, the Freedom Train went by. Even though they said on the news not to do that. And I still have a couple of those melted pennies. My mom bought a commemorative plate that she displayed proudly for years. So many tchotchkes. My father was a veteran who belonged to multiple veterans organizations, and my mom was in the auxiliaries for them. So there was a bunch of bicentennial-themed things happening for weeks. Picnics, dances, even a campout. It was huge. For the semi-quincentennial, well, I get to have the day off of work on Friday the 3rd.
Whoop-de-doo.
I know. She says, I'll probably catch up on my sleep.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Dina, you're feeling what a lot of us are feeling.
Yeah.
I love, of all of this, I love the penny on the train track, because that's also such a 70s thing to
do. Such a 70s right. thing. And we thought we might die. But you want to do it so badly, but you could die.
But how cool that it wasn't just from a random train. It was from the Freedom Train.
Yeah. The Freedom Train, you guys.
Well, I just wanted to touch on, too, I should have said one of my, I guess, greatest memories of the Bicentennial are the quarters. And that came from, it was such a big deal when we found out they were minting these special quarters. And then for years after, I would say well into the 80s, anytime I would get a quarter, I would look at it to see if it had the little drummer on it, if it was a bicentennial quarter. And if it was, I would just sort of say to myself, hey, bicentennial quarter.
It was a little dopamine rush, a little unexpected joy.
Yeah,
you guys. Like you were trained in 1976 to turn the quarter over and look at it to see if it was a bicentennial quarter.
Yes, for sure. Well, let's keep talking about the Freedom Train, because Sue underscore Tune underscore was in first grade in 75 and 76. Same. That year was full of all sorts of activities. The Freedom Train came through our town and we went on a field trip to it.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that would be like a teacher's wet dream. Wouldn't it? Like knowing, oh my God, it's coming here.
Yes,
we're going on a field trip. She says there were display cases inside holding historic artifacts and a moving floor that would keep us moving through the train.
I remember that part.
I don't remember this at all.
The moving floor.
Oh, my God. I just think that's so cool. Like, she got to peek inside it. I don't think a lot of us got to do that. We did have a lot of memories of seeing the Freedom Train, talking about the Freedom Train. So if you also wrote in a memory about the Freedom Train, you were one of many who were lucky enough to see it pass through your town. But Sue underscore Tune underscore, she got to go inside. And I think that's super cool. And I also love this memory she had. She said another time during the year, our whole school let loose red, white, and blue helium balloons with notes we had written attached to them.
Oh, sweet.
Another very 70s and 80s thing to do in school. We don't do that anymore because that kills the whales. Right. So it's a lovely memory that we all have, not for thousands and thousands of whales that we probably endangered
by
doing it.
We didn't know about the whales at the time.
Yeah. Maybe one of those notes was like, good luck, whale.
And we had the image, like we just knew that it was going to land in France and some other child was going to find it and read my note. Mm-hmm. Of course somebody was going to grab it. We didn't know that they would end up like trash.
Well, I got to say, a lot of people were all in on this whole bicentennial thing. Anna Cat Mom sent to us that her entire bedroom was red, white, and blue. A bit Bozo Circus, a bit bicentennial. Red, white, and blue flag Afghans were on our bunk beds. I mean, you guys.
Because there had to have been a shortage of red, white, and blue yarn that year. With all the grandmas crocheting
so hard. Like,
Afghans.
There was so much that I didn't know at the time was related to the bicentennial. So I'm sure I've shown you my Afghan that my grandma made me that is like neon pink, yellow, and green. Well, my brother's Afghan is red, white, and blue. And she would have given it to us in 1976.
Yes.
So duh, I didn't realize I have a bicentennial artifact like in my home right now.
Wow.
Knitted by Grammy.
I love that.
Mm-hmm. Or crocheted. What is Afghani?
It's crocheted.
I don't know. Okay.
Yeah. She crocheted it. I've seen it. It's crocheted.
Okay. Here's something from Chef Smarty Pants. We just talked about our friend Erica Wides. I also have to add that Erica Wides has a fantastic Substack that has cooking videos. She's a really great writer. She's got
so funny. Yeah.
Such good ideas to do with things that you have in your fridge. So, and again, that Substack is called Chef Smarty Pants. She says, our Long Island town was founded in the 1600s and has many colonial era houses, museums, etc. The museum organized a colonial festival where everyone chose their thing, like quilting, cooperage, you know, cooperage, blacksmithing.
Sure.
I did toys and games. The kids' options were obviously more limited and safe. We spent months in classes and workshops. Months. Oh, my God. We spent months in classes and workshops learning our skills. And then there was a festival where everyone showed off their special talents. My mom sewed us calico dresses and bonnets, a la El Hop. She said Little House on the Prairie was a huge deal. And we all colonialed it up. No mention of all the slave owning that also contributed to the wealth and development of the town, of course.
Yeah, then, we're just going to brush that under the
rug,
too.
Just sweep that under the
rug. We're in a celebration mode,
better,
people.
When we learned, we knew better. we did better.
We know.
I don't mean we're doing
we
it now. Wait, let me just say, I didn't mean that for now, by the way. Right. That was very something we should not have been sweeping under the rug.
Right.
But that's what we were doing. Okay, carry on.
Yes, we are being snarky. Then on the actual 4th, we drove to New York City to watch the tall ships parade. I remember watching this on TV. I think
too.
We watched from the Bay Ridge, Brooklyn Bridge and the fireworks. All I remember is that it was really hot. And once it got dark and the fireworks started, everyone stood up and I couldn't see anything. Then we drove home through 1970s Brooklyn and my dad made us keep the windows closed.
Oh my gosh.
We never had an air-conditioned car until the late 80s because he was afraid that fireworks would come through the windows. It was like driving through a war zone. But overall, being so young, it just seemed like everyone was super into it and really rallied behind the idea. Not like this time.
Yeah.
Wah, wah. Yeah. Got a lot of that from people.
A little
That's
bit different
today.
Erica, your day was a little bit different than my day in Woodson, Texas with the one fire truck parade. She's on like the Brooklyn Bridge watching the tall trucks. I'm like,
the tall ships.
The tall ships, the tall trucks, the tall ships. I'm lighting like fireworks, firecrackers
on the ground,
and throwing them
at
anthills. Yeah.
Yeah,
in West Texas. Okay. Torter reform? Is that how you would say that?
Well, sure.
Terraform?
Oh,
Terraform.
This person is an attorney.
Tort.
This
Got
is
it.
An attorney, yes.
I see that. I see it now, yes. I had a bicentennial-themed swim bubble swim aid. First of all, tort reform, I had a bubble. And it's styrofoam, right? I hope you're nodding your head right now.
What
styrofoam
is this?
With a little strap that just went around your belly.
Yeah,
it looks like
a
styrofoam. Oval kind of bubble.
I remember my sister had that.
And it just has a strap and you put it. So basically, unless you held your head up, you would just float face down
like
in the water.
Yeah, like dead man's float.
Yeah.
But that was our swim. I wore it all the time. I had to take it everywhere. So much. And then all my paint like flaked off my styrofoam. But hers was bicentennial themed. So I'm imagining some stars and stripes on that.
Yeah.
She had that at her Learn to Swim class at the Y. She also remembers seeing the tall ships. And this is going back to our point about how the bicentennial was celebrated all year long. Because she went to a haunted house called the Boo Centennial.
I love it.
Now, I'm imagining that's around Halloween later, but it could have been just a haunted house they had in July 4th. I don't know. We don't know. But she says it scared the bejesus out of her. She was 3. And she goes, I wish I could find some evidence that this actually existed because I've never run into anyone else who remembers it, probably in Massachusetts or New Hampshire. So if you remember DM tort reform.
Hi, everybody. Let's pause here because I want to tell you about two books that we've been reading. As you know, the three of us are always on the lookout for books with nostalgic vibes. And we had two land on our desk this week from bestselling author of many other sexy, messy, sort of erotic suspense novels, Kate Stewart. It's a duology and they have to be read together. The first one is called Drive. That's out now. And the sequel, Reverse, is coming soon. So here's the funny part. The nostalgia we're talking about is the early 2000s. That's nostalgia now, people. And I'm really trying to wrap my head around it. So Drive follows a music journalist who's torn between two men. It's an angsty, steamy rock star romance with a killer 2000s playlist. Okay, you had me at playlist, right? And the story will continue with Reverse. And in this one, the next generation uncovers secrets from the past and finds their own love story and their own playlist. The songs are important and each chapter opens with a song that you'll remember and love. These books are for people who like Colleen Hoover, and they are spicy, you guys. They are sizzling, high, high spice. So if you're into sexy, spicy, dark rock star romances with a playlist, check them out. Drive is out now, and Reverse is coming soon.
Okay, Heather's Pretty World, she thought that 1976 was a great year, as we all did. She was in 5th grade, and her dad was in the military, and she said, we happened to be stationed in Philadelphia that year. So we participated in all things bicentennial. My mom did make me a beautiful dress for colonial days at school. I see you, Heather, and I bet it was the best time of your life. I made my hat out of white eyelet lace. We all had to learn how to do things from the colonial era for an entire month at school. You guys, we could have our own little colonial Williamsburg.
I know.
Erica, she's got a skill. Heather here's got a skill. I'll be the tour guide. Anyway, we also took field trips to see the Liberty Bell and Independence Hall. She really wanted to see Betsy Ross's house, too. So her parents took her. And when 4th of July came, it was such a huge patriotic celebration. I can only imagine in Philadelphia what a great time it was. Mm-hmm. The fireworks were insane. My dad bought me a whole bunch of sparklers. And if I close my eyes, I can see myself skipping around the grass, a slice of watermelon in one hand and waving a sparkler in the other. Aww.
And then she's got a red heart, a white heart, a blue heart.
Yeah. I mean, being in Philadelphia, how cool.
Right.
No kidding. Here is Robin Joy Art and Stitchery. She says, I was in fourth grade. My wonderful teacher, Mrs. Murphy, wore only red, white, and blue clothing every day. I was fascinated by this. And she says, patriotism was strong back then.
I love that. That's a commitment. Shout out to Mrs. Murphy.
Mrs. Murphy.
No kidding. And everybody would want to come to school, too. It was like a great way to get your students to not miss out on school. Is she going to do it again today?
Yeah.
What's she going to wear today?
Yeah,
is she going to rewear something? That's great.
Okay, C.S. Java says, I remember being super excited about it, collecting the bicentennial quarters and decorating my bike. And her next memory is something I had totally forgotten about. Our family went to Disneyland that summer and saw America on Parade and the America Sings show. Mm-hmm. That like Husker Du'd me. I must have gone that year or something because I was like, I feel like I've seen that.
Well, and I think they showed it on Wonderful World of Disney.
Oh, maybe that's why,
Kristen.
I bet
them.
You're right.
Yep. Yes.
Yeah, I bet you're right. So, yeah, I just feel like that was something. So I'm sure many people listening probably visited Disneyland or Disney. Disney World was open then. Mm-hmm. During the year of 1976, I'm sure all the parades, the Disney parades, everything, the characters were probably dressed in red, white, and blue. And all the merch you could get probably.
Oh, yeah, right.
You know, remember just those felt banners? I had just like a Disneyland
like felt. A pennant.
That was a big, like a pennant. Pennant. Yeah. That's what I mean. A pennant. Yeah. That was a big deal souvenir to
get. Yes, it was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for that memory.
Jenny K. Marsh, 72. She says, I have 1776 beaded pin ornaments and a 1776 necklace of my mom's that I am wearing.
I love that.
I remember so many like stick pins, little flag stick pins and stuff like that. I had star earrings. I had little iridescent red, white, and blue star earrings that I wore.
Love that.
Very cool.
Kay Duffy, 8, said she grew up actually right next to the Stony Point, New York battlefield, and there were Revolutionary War reenactments all summer. And she has that all capitalized.
Yeah.
Cannon fire and popsicles.
Oh, so
I can only
popsicles.
Imagine that's probably kind of fun for the first day or two, but for all summer to hear that, that's probably just a very loud memory that she has of hearing that all of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's so funny that you associate it with popsicles. That's such a childlike thing. Because you didn't get popsicles any other time of the year.
Right.
Just in the summer.
Like
yeah. Right.
And probably those bomb pops, the red, white, and blue ones.
Oh my God.
That was their year to shine.
That's right. and drip.
But I know.
Do you remember? Did you guys have those? I can't remember who made them, but they came in like grape and stuff. And they were almost, they had two sticks inside.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They were like the true popsicle.
And you'd break it in the middle.
You'd break it.
Oh,
every
so
once
mad.
In a while, Lillian didn't make us break it. We got the whole thing. It was probably in 1976.
Can't you just see your mother's breaking it, like putting it on the side of the picnic table?
You had to
break it.
Yeah. My mom used to put a butter knife in the middle of it and like chop, 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 chop.
And every once in a while, it wasn't perfectly even. Those were rough days
Big
at the Leach House. That's
Big
right.
Fights.
Well, Holly Berry, 1217, our friend Holly Berry, she remembers something about the Freedom Train that we didn't mention before, which is a fact that I love. She remembers going to see the American Freedom Train. She has a lot of details about the Freedom Train, like it was 26 cars. It toured all 48 contiguous states from April 75 through December 31st, 1976. Over 7 million people toured its exhibit cars. Holly, did you Google this?
I know.
But she said it showcased over 500 priceless historical artifacts. Her favorite thing on the train was Judy Garland's ruby slippers from The Wizard of Oz. She was 13 years old. I don't think I remember that fun fact about the Freedom Train, that it had all these, almost like a traveling Smithsonian museum, right?
Yeah.
I don't think I knew a damn thing about it, except there was a train.
I don't even remember there being a train.
Right.
Again, Woodson, Texas.
Yeah. AQB Kid says, our neighborhood was on a cul-de-sac, so we were big into block parties. We shot off loads of fireworks, loads of fun. I also got a special bicentennial coin bank where I collected all the bicentennial quarters. Still have the bank, which is chock full of them. Sometimes I'll randomly get one and into the overflowing bank it goes.
Oh, I love that. That little dopamine rush of getting one.
Yeah. I need to start looking for them, but I don't use...
I know. I was just thinking of that, too. I don't use cash or
change anymore. Yeah. We do have a big jar of quarters in our laundry room that I moved here from Minnesota because I couldn't, I didn't have time to roll all the freaking quarters, and I couldn't find a counting machine. So we still have it. I'm going to go through them all. I'm going to find myself a bicentennial quarter.
I bet you've got several in there.
I bet I do.
Mm-hmm.
You do that.
That's your monument to doing laundry. I collected quarters for so long, it was like a tick. I couldn't stop. I couldn't stop collecting quarters.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when you saw, I even saw the shape of a quarter in a pile, I got excited and immediately had to go look at it. So our friend Gigi Halloween Baby said that my classmate pen pals with kids in another state. I love that. She also remembers colonial costumes for famous people on Halloween in 1975, mm-hmm. which reminds me that's also when I reused my colonial costume was on Halloween. I probably was until I outgrew it. I was probably Betsy Ross / Laura Ingalls / colonial baker lady for many, many years. And she said she also made a red, white, and blue cake for the 4th of July, which I am sure was a very popular, I can just see like an ad in Good Housekeeping.
Yeah, yes.
You know, how you could do that. You probably put gelatin in the in the
mix. I'm imagining layered jello salads in the 70s. Yeah. You know, that was a big deal. So can you imagine all the people who made like layered gelatin salads or cakes like that? Laura Minardi Jacobson was in a bicentennial club, which is kind of student council for bicentennial stuff.
Isn't that funny?
I mean, that's how serious we were.
Yeah. She had bicentennial club.
Right.
And meet about bicentennial stuff.
Yeah. There's so much stuff. Mm-hmm.
Johnny question. He said, I rode on top of a parade float dressed as John Hancock.
Of course he did. Also, don't you know, Johnny, I say don't you know, but you'd have to corroborate this, but I bet you felt super cool because your name is John. You know,
Johnny
when you're
Hancock.
A kid, things mm-hmm. like that were a big deal. Like, and I am John.
Did you hold a big pen in the air instead of waving? Did you sign your name
in the air?
Did you
pretend like you pantomimed signing?
Yeah, exactly. Don't you want to see him like standing? Like, what did he do on the float in his John Hancock uniform? What did he pretend that he was
like quill pen? Mm-hmm. And I can only imagine that. And you know what? It's kind of sad, you guys, with our generic Gen X names. We were never going to find a revolutionary hero that was a Michelle, a Carolyn, or a Kristen.
Never. It was never going to happen.
If you were Betsy,
yeah,
like our friend Betsy, you were all over that. Okay, I think this is so funny, and this was not the only comment we got like this, but our friend So Very Nicole said, the only thing that I remember about the bicentennial is that our individual kindergarten pictures had a flag as part of the scene the photographer set up.
Yes.
And we have had people send in photos of... they were posed with a little miniature Liberty Bell. I mean, all of our school photos.
Yes, so
like
or just that 70s backdrop, kind of JCPenney's backdrop. I love that.
So fun.
Mm-hmm. Gray Matters Photography says that my sister and I turned 6 on July 8th. So we had a bicentennial-themed birthday party. Of course you did.
Yes.
Here's what's such a fun and kind of pondering, something I need to ponder on for a minute. I remember my dad bought a red, white, and blue hose that was 76 feet long. So did the hose company, did they design a special hose?
Yes, they did.
I bet they did.
Yes.
Yeah. Because not only was it red, white, and blue, but mm-hmm. it wasn't 12 feet long. No. It wasn't 24 feet long. Nope. Mm-hmm. Wasn't 56 feet long. Wasn't 63 feet long. It was 76 feet long. You guys, that's very long.
It's very long. We don't care how much you need, you're getting 76. Because it's the goddamn bicentennial.
That is right. And so, I don't know. What did you guys do at the party? Did he squirt you with it? Did you hook it up to a sprinkler like 4 blocks away? And then you guys had to run the 4 blocks down to the end of the hose and run through it? Also, she's the one that says at school we all had our individual portraits that you're grasping a small Liberty Bell with a prominent American flag behind us.
And I think
we have a picture of
that. Like forming their hands on the Liberty Bell just right. Because it really was like grasping. And you know that wasn't natural. They're like, okay, put your forefinger here. Lay your palm right over the dinger. Okay, good.
The dinger.
I don't know. What are the parts of a bell? I have no idea. Oh, God. Okay. JWolf34 says, we made colonial skirts and caps in our sewing class, and we wore them to a special assembly. How special would you feel? How special.
They did
also,
that.
How 70s to have a sewing class.
I know.
Right.
That's like home ec probably, but I don't know. Home ec, you learn other things.
Sure.
JWolf says that it was sewing class. So sewing specific. Class. I love that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Home economics back in the day. Floss J said, we went to the start of a bicentennial wagon train that started in Blaine, Washington and ended in Valley Forge. The wagon train started almost a year before the actual bicentennial. So I'm thinking this is in addition to the American, you know, train that's traveling.
The Freedom Train.
Yeah, the Freedom Train. We've got a legit wagon train. Horses, buggies, whatever the thing.
Man, I would have taken the I would have been in the Freedom Train for sure. Miss Moonstruck, you are so lucky right now. So many people are going to be jealous of you. Very memorable year, I'd say. My dad went to Sears and bought us white with red and blue contrast Free Spirit bikes.
Okay, you guys, this one, who's going to be me too? Because I had a Free Spirit bike. I did not put that together. Free Spirit. Of course, that's 1776. Yeah. The spirit of 1776, whatever. I can't say it. I had that bike. Everything was bicentennial and I didn't even know it.
Oh, yeah.
That was my bike from Sears, the Free Spirit.
Yes, so cool.
Well, you guys, I had that bike too. You might remember. I had the 3-speed Free Spirit bike. I probably got it the Christmas of 1976 or 75. And boy, did I not want that. Did I want a real 10-speed with the handles and all of that. So I'm sad you guys were all excited about your Free Spirit bikes and I was not.
I was a little kid, though. It was my first bike. It was just in 1976. I had just learned to ride a bike on my Free Spirit. So I was little. I was not jonesing for a 10-speed yet.
Yeah.
Honey West 1117. They say, each class of our elementary school made a patch and art class, and then the art teacher sewed it all together to make a quilt. There were about 30 patches. Each one represented U.S. history or a U.S. landmark. It hung for about 35 years in the school, and then it was donated to the History Museum in our city. Think about that. People were wanting to leave their mark. It wasn't, yes, I know there was a lot of schlock and there was a lot of, like, you know, disposable shit, but some people were really trying to do things for longevity and for posterity. And I just think that's really cool.
Yeah, I love that one. I love that memory.
I do too. I do too. And here is a nod to those favorite clothes that we had during that time. So Miss Yingling says, oh, my red, white, and blue plaid pants, sneakers, and polyester disco shirt with the spirit of 76 on the back. It was in frequent rotation all year long.
Oh, Ms. Yingling,
I'm getting one. I tell you, I'm getting one.
I feel you so hard because, again, something I didn't even know was bicentennial oriented. My red, white, and blue plaid pants were my, those were blue jeans. They were red, white, and blue, and they were my favorite outfit. And my mom and I would battle when I would try to wear my red, white, and blue plaid pants. You've heard this before, people, with the orange and yellow granny square. And my mom would be like, it doesn't match. And I'd be like, what is matching? I don't even know what you're saying. And we would just battle it out because I had to wear those pants every day. They were so freaking cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you imagine? I'm sure there was a spread in our Sears catalogs during 1976 of those pants, because I think mine were tough skins.
Yes.
And then you could just see them being somebody wearing that exact disco shirt with the spirit of 76 on it.
Yeah.
And the sneaker. So it was just, it was everywhere.
I have such all that stuff. I want that disco shirt.
Pictures of those spreads and all that kind of stuff will be on social media this week, along with the pictures you have all sent in. Okay, Tameo Ryder. I'm right with you. So many memories of the summer of 76, but here's one that stands out. My friend's dad had a CB radio and my handle was Liberty Kid. So much better than my handle, which was Baby Shrimp.
Oh, yeah, Baby Shrimp.
And that was a big deal, like coming up with your handle. Like, it was like your first chance to kind of name yourself. And she chose Liberty Kid. Like, she was all in.
That's awesome.
Love it.
Kay Foster, historian, says, "My mother was bicentennial obsessed. That year I turned 10 and my birthday party was all red, white, and blue. She also had me dress up as a colonial girl for the 4th of July and Halloween." So mom was driving the bus on that one.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, I love that. And another birthday party. I mean, yeah. Gosh, I wonder if the kids were as excited about these as the parents were, you know, putting on the patriotic
ones. Oh, I bet.
Ones.
Because you know, the whole year leading up to it, like the last half of that school year, once it turned, well, probably even when it was 75, but especially the anticipation then for their birthday was right at the same time of the anticipation of the bicentennial. Yeah. So that's like double the excitement for your birthday.
My friend Tony, who had the Evel Knievel bike, his birthday is just prior to July 4th. And so he mentioned that he got his red, white, and blue tube socks and striped shorts and Izod shirt for his birthday. I said, "Did you have a bicentennial themed birthday?" And he stopped for a moment and he was like, "Oh my God, I think I did."
Sure.
Like he didn't even, it had like left his memory until the pictures start coming back to him and everything was red, white,
red, white.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I love this one that Ice Cream Lady 25 shared. She said, "My cousin Brad and I were on a float that my grandma's workplace sponsored. I was Betsy Ross." Oh, you lucky duck. "And Brad was Ben Franklin. Our moms and grandma made our outfits. I loved that dress with American flags and white apron. I had to act as if I was sewing the flag. And Brad held a kite."
Oh my God.
Memories. Yes. And red, white, and blue hearts after that.
I totally see her. She's pulling the thread and
yes.
She's very serious
yes.
about this.
Yes.
Like, I have
down.
A role to play yes. in America. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I am making the flag. It's like John Hancock. Was he writing in the sky?
Oh,
my God,
so good.
Funny.
Holly JH65 brings up something that I feel like last year or the year before we have posted on social media, because this was, I feel like in most cities, mm-hmm. the painted fire hydrant.
Yep.
I won a school contest and got to paint one.
Whoa.
That's so lucky. I painted it as a policeman, and now my son is a policeman.
That's very sweet.
Aw, there was a little foreshadowing there.
Yes.
There are so many great images of these fire hydrants. Painted everything that you can imagine, from dogs to Betsy Ross to John Hancock, Ben Franklin to, they're just great. They're so fun. Those will be shared this week on social media as well. It's going to be kind of a whole bicentennial themed week.
Yep.
Keep
your eyes
open. Socials this week. Yeah.
Julie Kennedy says, "I remember the months leading up to the bicentennial. My dad was a runner, so he participated in some event where you committed to running 200 miles over the year. I was not a runner, but I committed to running 200 laps around the track." Mm-hmm. I learned that I hated running around the track.
You know, the bicentennial taught us all lessons,
yeah,
didn't
she's
it? Valuable lessons.
The bicentennial.
And I think about it now. I wonder how many things that we maybe did 200 times. Like,
uh-huh,
it's also
great.
The number 200. You know, did you bring in 200, I don't know, pennies to school or something?
Yeah,
we probably
UNICEF
did a lot of math with the number 200.
Mm-hmm.
All right, this might be one of my favorite memories
so
that
good.
Was shared. This is from Kim Thomas Imbrigiata. Okay, ready? Kim says, "I was 9 years old. We went on vacation to Washington, D.C. for the 4th. Very exciting time to be there." Here are some of the trip highlights that she shares. "My brother got separated from us on the White House tour."
Oh, no.
"He bumped into Bob Hope."
So random. Is that the most random person to bump into at the White House?
Oh, my gosh. And here's another poor memory. Kim, you have got some really fun memories from this trip. Her little sister got her long hair caught in the wheel of her stroller, and her screams were memorable.
Happy bicentennial.
Oh, my God. Also, how long was your sister's hair? Was it 76 feet?
Yeah, it was the 70s.
And she said, then this is interesting because I didn't realize this. "One of the big events that week was the opening of the brand new Air and Space Museum. That was happening on a Friday, I believe, and huge crowds were expected. Thursday night, we were just strolling around, maybe before or after the hair incident. I don't know. And behind the museum, we saw some people going in. My dad thought, why not join them? So we somehow got the VIP early access. The best was knowing I was one of the first kids to touch the moon rock. And I always felt a little smug about that." I love
as
that.
You
and
should.
I also love, we had another person share a memory that, you know, some parents were breaking a few rules, it seems like, during the bicentennial. Mm-hmm. We got dad sneaking in here. We got the dad putting the pennies on the track yep. when everybody was saying, don't put pennies on the track. And do you ever remember, like, if your parents did something that you thought, oh, that's kind of naughty, like, my parents are breaking a rule. And it was kind of fun to see that.
It was like we were on the same team.
Okay. And then on the actual 4th, Kim says, we celebrated the birthday of our favorite American, my mom.
Aww.
She didn't want to go into the city. She wanted to drive through the mountains. Probably the most Americana day of my childhood.
Wow.
Wholesome 70s family road trip, 4 kids stuffed into the brown Chevy Impala, driving through the most beautiful place I'd ever seen. Stopping for lunch with where my parents surprised us by getting ice cream sundaes. Just ice cream for lunch. Obviously, still a top meal of my life 50 years later.
Aww.
That's a bicentennial memory not to forget, for sure.
Again, the parents breaking the rules. Like,
yes.
No vegetables today, children. Just uh-huh. ice cream.
Right.
I love that memory. I love that memory, Kim, all of it, but especially mm-hmm. the day of the actual 4th. The memories you shared are so 70s. Tina Chandler Pryor says, in 1976, the Lexington, Massachusetts Patriots Day Parade included President Ford waving out of the top of his limo. My mom snapped a photo. I was in 5th grade. One thing I love about this memory, about it being so 70s, my mom snapped a photo. Right
yes.
now, we would all be just going, we would be touching the button on our phones right. 100 times to
and
watch.
And not being in the moment. Like, right. you know, you snap right, yeah. the photo, you put uh-huh. your camera
got the
down,
photo.
And then
yes.
you
might
saw
be blurry.
What was happening.
Maybe I didn't get it. He might have been looking away, but I got my photo.
That's right. And yeah. I bet you anything, that photo you're looking at and you're like, is there a person in that
no.
photo?
No.
That's right.
Is that
how
Ben
close
Franklin?
Can really be?
Yeah. I was going to share. I forgot to share this a little bit earlier, but when we were talking about the schlock, there is in the presidential, in Gerald Ford's presidential library, a can of bicentennial air.
I remember that.
Yes.
I totally remember. And I was like, what do you do with it? And people are like, you breathe it. I'm like, why? I don't get it.
Yeah. I thought that was kind of fun. And again, enough of a cultural artifact that it is in Gerald Ford's presidential library.
Oh, my God.
I was just there a year ago. I don't remember seeing that, but I bet
oh.
I did.
Wow.
Here's from Alana Mack Bishop. You guys, I just want you to picture this scene. Just picture it in your mind. Alana says, my family dressed in period costumes and sat at the end of our driveway to watch a wagon train travel past our house.
Oh, Alana, yes. did you live in Woodson, Texas?
They probably had some flags they waved when the wagon train went by.
Yeah,
but you got
to
wear your Betsy Ross
the wagon
hat.
Train. That's you the one that was traveling from Blaine, Washington to Valley
yes,
Forge.
I bet it was. But my favorite is the whole family did it.
Yeah,
like,
the whole family.
Mom and dad, too.
Sitting in their webby little,
yes,
like long
their
chairs.
Dad was in, like,
chairs.
Some breeches.
Yes,
those kind of plaid woven,
yeah, polyester
fold-out
woven
chairs. Yeah,
folding
that,
chairs.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Everybody
scratch
was
the
all
back
in.
Here,
this
like,
is, you know, even dad. Like, for
yes.
me, when dad got involved in something, this was, like, a huge
right.
deal. So
mm-hmm.
dads are really invested in this.
Yeah. Terry Schlicht Scarbalus says, my Catholic grade school had a parade. I dressed up as Betsy Ross, cap and all. I was 7 years old. My older sister was a colonial drummer. Everyone dressed up in colonial outfits. Definitely a lot of red, white, and blue. The more we talk about this, the more we realize the costuming was probably the best part.
Well, but I also love that they have a colonial drummer. You know, they also probably had the person playing the little fife, you know,
yes.
as they're
yep.
walking along. Jana Keller says, my dad, who was not an arts and crafts type of guy, insisted that we decorate our Christmas tree.
Oh, my God.
In red, white, and blue that year, we cut stars out of styrofoam and sprinkled them with glitter.
Aww.
I still have one of them.
Aww.
Of course you do. I bet that's a treasure to put on your Christmas tree. And I bet every year she starts to tell the story and
yes.
her kids are going, we know Grandpa made you decorate the tree in red, white, and blue. We know.
Still, it's a great memory. Now the grandkids can start
hearing
about
it. Oh, I love
it.
I love it. Yeah, well, even at Christmas.
The involvement of the dads as equal to the
yeah.
moms. That
mm-hmm.
is such mm-hmm. a rare thing. Like, we've all told stories about things that our dads were into, but it wasn't a family thing necessarily. This
right?
was, the whole family was all in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here's Anne Rice Else. She says, It was so exciting to celebrate America's bicentennial. I remember many activities at my school to celebrate, including a cherry pie baking contest. My pie placed first. I remember wearing colonial dress and bonnet to school. Everybody drink if you dressed up as Betsy.
Yeah, right?
The best part was attending a big bicentennial party thrown by my aunt and uncle. My sister, brother, and I went in costume, drink, as George Washington, Uncle Sam, and the Statue of Liberty.
Oh, I love it.
The costuming, it makes me want to go get a Butterick pattern. Right now.
Right. I know.
Right now.
Probably costs a pretty penny. It's probably a collector's item.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
This is one of my favorite memories that someone shared. This is from Yvette Steen. She was six, and her small hometown had a greased flagpole climbing contest. Oh my gosh. So, like, all in Crisco or something, up and down this aisle or up and down this flagpole. The first person to ring the bell at the top of the flagpole won a special prize. I stood in my star-spangled bib overall shorts and watched all kinds of people attempt to reach that bell as they slid down. My mom grabbed me and said that I was going to ring that bell. Before I knew it, I was the third and top person in a human ladder.
Oh my God.
I was sitting on some guy's shoulders who was standing on another man's shoulders.
Oh my God.
How incredibly safe was that? I think the prize may have been a bicentennial quarter. I was more excited about getting my picture on the front page of the local newspaper.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, the local newspaper.
Mom's like, you're ringing that damn bell.
That's right. Oh, and you guys, let's just a little nod to the local newspaper when that could be on the front page and that was news you got to cut it out and you were all excited to see, you know, either someone you knew or in this case, yourself.
I'm just imagining how terrifying. She has to get on the guy's shoulders first.
Then he has
to somehow stand on another man's. So think how she's like teetering around. Oh. Holding on to his head for dear life. You are going to touch that bell. Mom's like, hold on.
Just hold on.
I mean,
she's not super old
because she's in bib overalls, but she was probably 4 or 5. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she had to be light enough that they could, mm-hmm. you know.
Elaine Hesser was born in 1962 and says, my mom and grandmom put a lot of stuff together for our town's bicentennial. Mom was the chair of it, and my grandmother could write a pageant like you wouldn't believe.
Oh, whoa, cute.
So more than one.
I know. We painted fire hydrants to look like colonial soldiers. I participated in a bicentennial princess contest. There was a pageant in which I danced a minuet with a cast of dozens.
Oh my God.
A parade and colonial Olympics. I won for the longest continuous apple peel. Carolyn, this is right up your alley. You need to be taking notes for one day when you're working at Colonial Williamsburg.
Yes. Oh, Eileen, congratulations.
You need to somehow introduce an apple peel contest.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. The Colonial Olympics. Like, what other things did they... Well, maybe it was, you know, somebody who had their cooperage skills was in the Colonial Olympics.
I don't even know. Yeah, but I just can only imagine how long that continuous apple peel was. And then on July 4th, Elaine was awarded the God Home Country Medal in the Girl Scouts.
I can just picture that God Home Country Medal.
Yeah. I can just picture the ceremony of it.
Yes.
I'm sure there's many flags.
Kimberly Rose says, our dance studio did a salute to George M. Cohen for our recital. I collected Liberty dolls. Yeah. From Kmart. I had a Spirit of 76 bike from Sears. Woohoo for the free spirit. On the actual day, we had a picnic at our local recreation park. Our next door neighbors came with us. We ate, played, rode some rides, and stayed for the fireworks. It was so much fun.
I just love the dance studio's salute to George M. Cohen for the recital.
So there were so many salutes, too.
But also so many recitals, I bet. So
yeah.
My sister was in one. She remembers the grand old flag, and I think it was a tap, of course, dance that they did. But yeah, I'm betting most of the dance recitals in this time
were piano recitals, all playing patriotic songs, for sure. Everywhere.
Mm-hmm. And for Jen Abbott Chaffman, she was in 5th grade. She remembers the bicentennial quarter, and she also remembers those news cut-ins about the bicentennial on Saturday mornings. Do you guys remember, like, I'm trying to remember who it was, but I think it was CBS that would do those. Because on ABC, we had Schoolhouse Rock, and so maybe a lot of us didn't watch the CBS Saturday mornings, but they would have, like, legit, real, almost news stories, but for kids that celebrated. She says it was on NBC.
Oh, okay.
That were about 1776 on NBC. And she says her fifth grade class, much like mine, did a performance about it. And each of us walking across the stage and reciting a line.
Aww.
Yeah, so fun.
That's so cute. Well, Andrea Galinter's dad was a cameraman for NBC. That's
oh, wow.
so cool. What a cool job for your dad
yes.
to have, right? So he was working, of course, because it sounds like they lived near Washington, D.C., because it says, my mom, brother, and I went downtown Washington, D.C. to the National Mall with another family. The Concorde flew over, and as it happened, my dad was on a huge scaffold, perhaps 20 feet in the air, about 20 yards away from where we had spread our blankets and staked out our spot. We went over to the scaffold and jumped up and down and yelled at him, but to no avail. My dad never saw or heard us.
Oh.
I know without a doubt that if he had noticed us, we would have been on TV in a bicentennial scenes from the National Mall clip on the
Aww.
Nightly news at 6 and 11.
Oh,
so cool. Like, yeah, like the other family that went there. What a cool place to be on July 4th, 1976. The
yeah.
just the feeling of community and celebration must have been just
yeah.
next
and
level.
I got a little hooscrewed when she said the Concorde flew over, or the Concorde. Remember the giant airplane, the Concorde? Like
yes.
that, was
yes.
that like the first one that could go
yes.
like from the, oh my gosh. And it looked like, didn't it look like kind of a stealth bomber? I don't know. I could be totally making that up. It's
no,
probably
I think
a regular
it did.
Looking
it looked
an
different.
Airplane.
Like you knew it yes. when you saw it. You
but it was a big
it.
Deal. Like, whew, that was fun.
Karine Putansu says, my family belonged to a black
Good
powder
God.
Muzzle loaders reenactors group at the time.
Let's all, can we pause?
Okay.
Can we pause and let that sink in?
I'm going to say,
I don't have anything to say.
My family belonged to a black powder muzzle loaders reenactors group at the time. Because bicentennials. Because
it's so
bicentennial.
Specific. It's
yes, it is.
So specific.
Yes.
Is that a thing? So is that a thing even when it's not the bicentennial?
Oh, I think so. I think
is
so,
it a thing
yes.
today?
Yes. And she says, my dad, my brother, and I walked in a community parade with the group in our Pioneer Fur Trapper outfits homemade by my mom.
Drink.
We continued with the group. Yep, drink. Everybody drink. We continued with the group for several years more. Best way to learn history. Amen, sister.
I mean,
amen.
We don't doubt it
yeah.
for one second.
Absolutely.
And probably a part of history that a lot of us don't know about.
Really? Right.
Right. It's so specific. Her.
Oh, these memories have been so fun to read. I mean, I get like a little almost, some of them are kind of bittersweet because I think this was, again, a time where we all just were on the same page and we were
yes.
all celebrating
yes.
for
you know what I'm really it's really making me realize right now is just once again something that I know that we're all really proud of that this podcast does is that it connects us all. And
yeah.
so I, you know, at the beginning I told you I was just in sleepy little Woodson, Texas, you know, lighting off my Roman candles and playing with sparklers and whatever. And it's just really making me realize that at that exact same time, at that exact same moment, all of these other things were happening,
yeah.
and I feel really connected to all of these people, but I feel connected to all of you
yeah.
By remembering that we were all there doing all
right.
these different things on that exact same day, and in some way, we were all celebrating.
We were
yeah.
all
and it's
celebrating
just really cool.
together the same thing. And think about this. This is all of these comments that we weren't able to include today. We weren't able to include them because they were so similar to all of the others. And what that means is that we were all celebrating the same thing
mm-hmm.
in the same way on the same day.
Yeah.
And that
so
is a beautiful
many,
thing.
So many community
yeah.
parades and festivals and birthday parties and all of this kind of stuff that
and, colonial
and so
garb
many costumes.
Yes,
so,
so many costumes.
Drinks.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes, yes. Well, speaking of costumes, I'm going to share this. It'll be our final comment that we're going to share. But this came from Chatty Cathy 513. And this might, I keep saying every time before I read a comment, this might be my favorite comment.
Oh.
But this one is classic. She writes, I was 11 and we were visiting my grandpa on Long Island, New York. The yacht club down the street was having a boat parade on July 4th, 1976. So my dad, sister, and I dressed in red, white, and blue and wore ketchup-soaked bloody headbands and played a foil-covered fife and drum while my grandpa waved a 76 flag. We won first place in the boat decor contest and made the front page of the East Rockaway newspaper.
Nicely done.
You go, Chatty Cathy.
Nice use of ketchup.
Can't you just picture the ketchup spoons on their heads?
Yes.
It's just so. And then you take the tin foil and put it around. Yep, that's your fife. Mm-hmm. I am cracking up. And I'm wondering, are they like marching on the boat? Did they make their little fingers go on the fife?
Maybe they're standing on the edge, like, wasn't it George Washington at like the Valley Forge?
On the bow?
Yes, one foot up.
Playing the fife? Yeah. With the bloody head, you've got a bloody head playing the fife and posing. Oh my God.
And we all know exactly what that scene is. Like, that's another cool thing. Like, that's an iconic scene in our memories of the American Revolution.
And bonus points for making it bloody.
Like, that's why they won.
That's why they won.
They went all in.
It was the ketchup for sure. Well, you all might be wondering as you're listening to this episode, what are you going to do on July 4th, 2026? How will you feel? What are you going to do about this day? But I think Mike Derrico, the author of Bicentennial Chic, is going to show us the way, as well as all of these comments that you heard from your friends today. These are all your friends, right? He wants his book, Mike wants his book to be a form of time travel for you. He wants his book to be a form of time travel for you. Immerse yourself in the celebration that was uplifting and unifying 50 years ago. Here's what he says. I'm going to read this as a quote. And I just think it's overarching advice, right? This is for every day of our lives. I think we can take this to heart and embrace it on July 4th, 2026. Every generation rides its own nostalgia wave. Sadly, I believe we spend too much time wishing we could go back to something, some particular time and place, without realizing we're already back there in mind and heart. And sometimes without warning, the simple sound of a piece of music will be our transport and make it as real as it was back then. Because of this, it's probably more likely that time travel happens much more than we think, and far more times that we're even aware of. It happens in those moments when we hear that song that delivers us directly into the backseat of our parents' car, and suddenly we're 7 years old again. A simple smell could put us back in our grandmother's kitchen. These are the brief flashes that serve as the only conduits to the past. Yes, Mike, thank you for the pep talk. We can do this. Uh-huh. Make this 1976 playlist. Make Afternoon Delight the theme of July 4th, 2026, because it was the theme of July 4th, 1976. Find your pictures of you and your sisters wearing your Betsy Ross costumes. Replicate the day with sparklers and dilly bars and red, white, and blue tube socks. We were so lucky to be alive for this moment when unity actually was possible. And maybe by reliving it, we can light the spark for making it happen again. Thank you so much for listening. We will see you next time and have a very happy 50th anniversary of the Bicentennial.
That's how I'm going to be thinking of it. Before we hit stop, a huge thanks to our crew over on Patreon. You all keep the mics on, the memories flowing, and the Gen X spirit alive. Seriously, we couldn't do this without you. I'm going to say the word literally, and I mean
literally.
Literally. Mm-hmm. today, we're giving a special shout out to these patrons. Derek, thank you for being our newest patron.
Yes.
We appreciate you. Rosa, Christy, Jenny, Sherry with two R's, Nina, Patty with an I, Rochelle, Joanna, Carolyn, Jennifer, Cindy, Colette, and Susan.
In the meantime, let's raise our glasses for a toast, courtesy of the cast of Three's Company. Two good times.
Two happy days.
To Little House on the Prairie.
And 1976.
And 1976.
She's a grand old flag. She's a high-flying flag and forever.
The information, opinions, and comments expressed on the Pop Culture Preservation Society podcast belong solely to Carolyn, the Crushologist, and Hello Newman, and are in no way representative of our employers or affiliates. And though we truly believe we are always right, there is always a first time. The PCPS is written, produced, and recorded in Minneapolis, Minnesota, home of the fictional WJM Studios and our beloved Mary Richards. Nanu Nanu, keep on trucking, and may the force be with you.
Before we dive into today's trip down memory lane, a quick shout out to the fine folks at Remind Magazine, who help keep the nostalgia train rolling. This season, the Pop Culture Preservation Society is proudly sponsored by Remind, the publication that understands your collection of Tiger Beat magazines, TV guide issues, and random lunchboxes is not clutter. It's history. We love when Remind lands in our mailboxes and we can enjoy that analog experience of flipping through its pages and reading all about the
classic TV shows and movies and music and all of those pop culture treasures that made us who we are. And as an exclusive offer to PCPS listeners, you can get a full year of Remind magazine for just $12. That's 86% off the cover price. Just go to remindmagazine.com/pop. That's remindmagazine.com/POP. And you can take advantage of this incredible offer. Trust us, you will be so glad you did.